Come on and get it, honey, while the getting's good, good, good.
Hello and welcome to Unapologetically Judith Owen. This is the podcast from Judith Owen. Hi, Judith Owen.
Hello, BB.
And me, BB Lynch. Now, Judith, I'm not suggesting I'm obsessed with you or even a little in love. I mean, let's let the lawyers decide. But I have been watching, reading, listening to all your interviews about your latest incredible album, Come On and Get It. And what comes across loud and clear is the album is, yes, of course, a beautiful homage to and a celebration of the unsung, brilliantly talented women of 40s and 50s jazz and blues. But it's also a celebration of how badass they were, their attitude, how unapologetic they were, and how powerful being unapologetic is. And that's what this series is talking about. You haven't once told me that I look pretty in red. Not once.
It's the first thing I said. That is such... The difference between you and I, or you and me, I'm not sure which is right. I lead with, I am a bottomless pit of need. As an art, you know, as a musician. And you pretend you're all so filled up. And there you go. Like fishing, fishing line out. But I do love you. And you do look good in red, by the way.
Thanks, sweetheart. And you look beautiful. And I'm going to go with the whole Come On and Get It ethos is, well, it's a celebration of these amazing women. And what we love is not just their music, of course their music, but not just their music, but how unapologetic they were. And in another way that they were supremely unapologetic, one way that they seem to be especially unapologetic in a really beautiful way was in their support of and for each other. Did they all know each other?
There was, in Nellie Lutcher's case, there were a group of women at that time who were solo pianists. What they did, what these women were all about to me, because I don't believe they were like hanging out or anything like that. I mean, I don't know that, but you know, they were living all in different places and all over America. But what I think represent they celebrated female power and sexuality. They were presenting themselves as being, you know, they were like the cheerleaders for the rest of the gals. You know, they were through their songs and through the way they looked, the way they were, how they were saying, it's really great to be a sexy woman, to enjoy that sexuality, to have fun with it, to have a sense of humor about it, to be a strong woman. To be, yeah, surrounded by these male musicians who are in your band, but you're in control. You're the leader. I think they did so much for women because, again, they weren't being the decoration. They weren't being the ornamental, you know, girl singer at the front of a band. The way they supported women was in the way that they performed, what they did, what they sang about. This was groundbreaking. I mean, this wasn't like, you know, 70 years ago, this was not sort of stuff that anybody spoke about. You know, people weren't really talking about female sexuality at all. Good grief, that didn't come along until the 60s. And even then that was fought. So it wasn't seen, you know, nice girls. That was the joke. I'd say it again, that marvelous song of Julie London, you know, nice girls don't stay for breakfast, pass the jam. It really is, you know, what everything that they were doing was saying, come on, girls, we like sex too. We are sexual creatures. We are sexy and beautiful and confident, and we have a sense of humor. And it's not just something that men get to do. That's what they were sending out there. And they were making that a level playing field. I think that's what they were saying, is that we are sexual creatures.
But they were also allowing each other to exist by existing.
It's by demonstration, isn't it? It's by actually doing it that you are giving people permission, giving other women permission to be their best selves, their biggest selves, their authentic selves is by demonstration. And I think these women gave other women permission to be unique, to be one of a kind, to be bold, to be fresh, to be brave, to be fearless, to be driven by their careers. Hello, there's a new one. I mean, this wasn't a time where career women were applauded. This was seen as being like, you know, you get married, you have kids, you go home and you take care of your husband and your children. That was what was expected. And these women ran in the face of that. I mean, they all tried to have private lives, as in personal lives, and they all failed mostly. with umpteen marriages, all a bit of a disaster, of course, because guess what? They were really committed to and driven by this thing. They were career women. They were absolute career women.
Did they have to be especially supportive of each other because it was that time, it was the music industry and it was jazz?
Well, I mean, you know, I think of all the areas of the music business, I think probably jazz is the most male. I mean, it's all very male. Always has been, always will be. And remember, this was the jazz era, you know, so jazz was pop music. So just imagine if pop music, if today everything that was like in the charts was jazz, you know, this is what we're talking about. Mm-hmm. That's what it was. It went hand in hand with how society saw women. You know, it was very misogynistic. It was very sexist. It was entirely racist. And really, you know, we think we've only just created sex, of course, and that people have only just been bumping and grinding. Man, these women were just out there saying the most incredible thing. There's a very famous song called Shave 'Em Dry. I can't even sing it because I am such a prude, and I'm not a prude when it comes. If you hear what I sing, it's fine. But I believe in being subtle about it in double entendre. Well, this stuff, oh my gosh.
Give me the worst line. Just whisper it so no one else will hear.
I can't. I mean, I just can't. I can write it down.
Mime it. Oh my God, Judith, I can't believe you're miming it.
No, I know. I tried and it was terrible. When I read my MD, my musical director, David Tukanowski, sent me the lyrics and said, maybe try this for the next album. And I read the lyrics. Stuff came out my nose. I was laughing so hard. And I'll own that. I'm taking that because it was just like, no, surely not. And then I went and I listened to, do yourselves a favor, listeners, go to YouTube and look up Shave 'Em Dry. Wow. It's all I can say. Wow. It's like, what is going on?
That's a million people's search history ruined.
Right there. Well, at least they're off Pornhub. So well, that's all I'm saying. So these women came in ready for action. You know, it was, they came out of church, many of them. So obviously, you know, it was going to this secular place from that is always a tricky transition. But what they were doing was something more elegant, a little bit, it was more refined, but it was still coming from blues. This was jazz and blues, but blues, as we know, has always had the bump and grindness. That's why we love it. That's why we love the sound of it. It's got that sexy, you know, saucy underbelly to it at all times. It's fantastic. Can't imagine what it must have been like being a woman at that time and trying to be taken seriously. Because I can only tell you that it's been hard enough for me. And I've, you know, and with musicians, don't get me wrong, musicians are the greatest people on the planet. I'm surrounded by some truly wonderful, extraordinary people, mostly men. And they have, I've only ever had respect and joy and appreciation and love from the men around me. I think the biggest problem for women is women being each other's best friends and best allies. I think this has been a major problem with women supporting historically. I think we all know why. And that's because we've been sold a lie, which is that there's only so much to go around. There's plenty of seed to go around. You know, it's like literally throwing out the, you know, the corn to the chickens. There's bags of it for the guys. It's fine. But for the woman, there's only so much to go around. And I think women understand that when they hear that. Men might not get what this means, but I think any woman hearing this will know what I'm talking about. There's always been a sense of like, there's just one guy that we're all after, or, you know, it's like everything is on rations or limited, you know, and there's only so much. You can only be that. Oh, we've got a woman that's in that area. We've got our woman in that department. We've got, you know, we've got this, we've got that covered. There's always been a feeling that women can't be each other's allies and best friends because there's so few places where we can exist. So we have to compete, and competition has become the word, I believe, that women have felt is like their MO. We are always competing. And then suddenly you realize, hang on, we're not. I mean, we've been made to feel it, and we've certainly been forced into a situation where it's like, you're going to be a backing singer because there's only very few people are up front, you know, that kind of thing. But this is not just music. This is life. I think in life, in every area of life, women feel like they're competing. They really do.
I remember working, I was on a magazine. Oh my God, Judith, there was an editor there who was such a piece of work. And I remember one of the editorial assistants wanted to write. And she was, and this is back in the day where we would print out something, right? And so she'd written something. And I was like, yeah, it's really good, you know. So she printed it out and she handed it to the editor. And this was her first attempt at writing. And she and this was in an, you know, aspirational women's magazine environment. And she handed it to the editor, really like excited and nervously, and gave it over. And the editor, a woman, got a pen, red pen, and crossed through it and wrote, "This is shit," and handed it back. Patriarchy had nothing to do with that woman.
Nothing to do with it. And that, by the way, that is a woman behaving like the men she has been hurt and insulted by. I have to say it.
Extraordinary.
So, and that's, I think women are realizing, yes, you're right, that you can't get away with that anymore. But I think women are now at a point where we realize there's plenty of pie to go around. Actually, we don't, you know, we should be each other's greatest allies. I think women are, you know, one of the things that I loved about doing this project, one of the things that really made me the happiest, is finding out these women's stories about how every one of their stories reads like a movie. It's so unbelievable. Their life stories are incredible. And I feel like in my live shows, I want to give the audience these like incredible stories. I want to share it with them because we should be sharing these women's stories. These are the women that are responsible for people like me being able to do what I do, for many of us being able to get up and stand up and do what we do. These are the women that put themselves out there first and opened the doors. And I'm very grateful for this. And I hate that they have been forgotten because, you know, there was only so much room for, you know, the pie was small. So I really do believe, and I think Halle Berry said this, I adore her for this, is that, you know, we should be sharing women's stories, and we should be sharing the stories of women that have gone before, and we should be celebrating them and being grateful for them. Because I think, you know, we've gone through the whole Me Too thing, and I always get a bit panicky when something gets a label or a name. You know, it's like labels to me, they're like categories and pigeonholes. They suit a purpose, and it comes and goes very quickly. You know, it's like, it's all right, we've done that now. Tick, boxes tick, tick. All right, now it's a new world. We're fine now. It's all, everything's changed. It's all, everything's good now. No, it's not. No, it's not. And what needs to happen, I believe, is that women really do need to be their greatest supporters. And I get so excited when I see, you know, people like Hello Sunshine and Reese Witherspoon's, which, you know, a company, and places where women are creating businesses for women, run by women, about women. This is fantastic. And that's not, you know, none of us want a world where it's like, you know, I love men. I'm surrounded by men. Men are my band. Men are my world. You know, in that way, this is the truth. This is the reality of the world that I'm in. But I don't ever, ever want to be in a situation where I feel that I can't have another woman on stage with me and not be her biggest fan, you see, or not have someone working with or for me because that woman is the right person for this job and she's incredible. I don't ever want to feel ever like there's any weirdness or any sense of, you know, it's sort of like,
You want everyone to be nice to each other. It's bottom line, right? You want everyone to treat everyone equally, and that, you know, across the board, whatever. There's something especially painful when a woman doesn't do that. And like, and what is that? Is that going back? What is that about? But that exists, doesn't it?
It's so disappointing. It is about the way that we've been raised. You know, you can't, obviously, you know, an arsehole's an arsehole. You're going to meet somebody you don't like. You're not going to like him just because they, you know, female. You know, that's not it. That's not what I'm talking about. It's across the board, whoever you are, whatever gender you are. It's all about, are you a really fine human being? Do you make me laugh? Are you somebody I want to be around? Do you enhance the world and life? Are you generous of spirit? I believe that when we're kind of starved as children, and I use that euphemism, but you know what I mean. Starved emotionally. When you have that sense when you're little that there's not enough to go around. It's a big bad world out there. You know, you only have what you're raised with. You only get those tools that you're given. And if somebody tells you that you should be supporting, you know, that it's great to support the people that you love, the people you respect, the people you admire, people whose art is wonderful. To me, it's just one more thing that comes from your upbringing and from society. I mean, that really is where it comes from. But if you're a sort of empty person and you feel starved, I'm going to hold my hand up here, Bibi, and admit that when I was years and years and years ago, I wasn't able to look at other women who were doing well and were getting the things that I wanted. I could love their music. I could be a fan, but a part of me felt hurt, you know, was pained. What we feel often as human beings is that if you're doing well, that means that there's no pie for me. Let's get back to the pie. You know what I'm talking about. It's that feeling of, and this is bullshit. But when you've grown up with, there's only so much pie to go around, which is bullshit. If somebody's getting a bit of the pie, it means there's less for you. This is a lie, people. It's a lie. And it took me years to realize that somebody doing well doesn't mean anything except bravo, you're doing well. Now I'm going to do well. It's fine. It doesn't stop me.
You know who I found another speech that I thought was so brilliant was Michelle Yeoh, her best actress speech at the Oscars.
That was a really special night because it was very female centric and it was very diverse and it was a very, very different. And then there was Angela Bassett, which nobody can believe she's that good looking. I mean, I don't even know how that works. So, I mean, I was just looking on in awe thinking, this feels good.
Not just women supporting women, but women supporting women who usually, historically, are invisible.
That's right.
So Michelle Yeoh, best actress speech at the Oscars, ladies, don't ever let anyone tell you you're past your prime. How powerful is that?
The beauty, I mean, it was a very interesting moment. I don't know if you felt the same way, but all these spectacular women who weren't, you know, aren't meant to be doing well at this age, they're meant to be gone away and invisible. They just looked like goddesses, you know. I mean, they looked real and fabulous with the grey hair and the stunning and everything and empowered. And then Harrison Ford shuffled on, and it was like, oh, flip, you know.
I still.
Well, of course you would. Who wouldn't, mate? I'd climb on. Honestly, I'm a big fan. You know, the man's hot. He'll be hot when he's, you know. These women just look. They did. They looked like, oh my God. They were shining from within.
Is that the start of things changing? Because I was talking to a girlfriend who's a magazine editor, my kind of age, and we were saying, I'm late 50s. God, I can't believe I've said that out loud, but I'm late 50s. And I think she's a little bit younger, but we were saying, how lucky to be our age at this time.
Yeah, I agree with you.
Because even 10 years ago, we were redundant.
It's just a shameful thing, you know, that in every aspect of life, so ironic that women really do improve with age, and we do. And I think that if you can, you know, if you can keep the body and the face up with the brain, you're doing that. That's really the aim. That's really what we want to be. And that doesn't mean being looking like you're 24, by the way. That just means looking like a fabulous you at the age that you are, as you do.
Thank you, as do you.
Thank you, darling. Yeah. I felt it that night. I've been feeling it deeply. I feel it every time I go on stage, Bibi, because here I am, you know, bouncing around, dancing my ass off on the, although it's still there hugely, but I'm dancing my ass off every night like a mad thing to this incredible music and singing my heart out. And I have that thought regularly, which is, I can't imagine that when I started out that it would have been possible to be a grown-up feckin' woman, you know, like a real woman, and to be having the kind of success that I'm having, and to be utterly appreciated because life has always been so ageist, so sexist. I mean, that is the truth. It's the truth. It's terribly ageist, unless you're 80 and you're Harrison Ford. That's my point.
Do you mean the future ex, Mr. Beebe?
Yeah, let's talk to Callister about that. Eh? I do think there's a turn. I think there is a sea turn, a tide, whatever the heck that thing is called. I do think there's a change. I do.
Well, you called it, when we spoke before, you said, and I really thought this was really clever, that whole post-Me Too movement is actually the kind, it should now be called the what now
Oh, I love that I said that. Can I take it back, please? Because it sounded like you thought of it. That's what I mean. It's just like, don't put a bloody label on it and think, done, we're done now. No, we're not. We're not. But there is a change. There is a difference in the way that women are seeing, here we go again, the pie. Steady. It's not.
Call it pizza because I'm less keen on pizza.
No, it's not pizza. It's a pie, mate. It's a pie. So, okay. But it's a carrot pie. That's boring. That you can get your head around that. There you go. There you go.
I'm over it. Over it. Yeah, cool. Well done. I interviewed a brilliant comedian recently, and she was talking about comedians, female comedians that had inspired her. And she said one of the things that inspired them so much about them was when they started, like back in the day, they were the only one on the bill and they were the token one on the bill. And it was quite an aggressive attitude towards them. And now it's a very nurturing thing backstage. And it's like, it's lots of women that, you know, it's not the exception. It's not the, you know, it's not unusual as, oh my God, don't get me onto your Tom Jones
to be loved by anyone.
Comment on your show.
So I'm going to bypass that. You're right. The time when it used to be you were the exception to the rule, and we have our female performer, we have our one person. That is a thing of the past. I hope that is a thing of the past more and more. Again, it's sort of it behooves, but you know, like you were talking about the terrible woman that the editor. It really does behoove women to. In places of power and places, you know, with the ability to open doors to younger women to pass the baton, to be able to say, okay, I am going to be mentoring. I am going to be bringing in more women. I am going to be doing this, not for the sake of it because they're women, but because they're great what they do and because they're the right people for that position.
And you're right. And not only does it nurture and inspire and give succor to people that want to be that role within that environment at the time that are kind of trying to do it there and then. But if it's comedy, for instance, if it's music, for instance, it's people watching it. It's people experience it who then they see themselves. They see what's possible. I think it's so moving. When it comes to female friendship and support, what do you think we can learn, or what have you learned from our Come On and Get It gals?
The message that they gave to me and sent to me was to have fun, be funny, to be kind of a bit larger than life, you know, to be fearless in every aspect of it. I will share another one of my fab Hollywood stories. I think it's fab anyway, but you know, I don't know what they would call it now because you can't say anything anymore, of course, but I would refer to myself as being an absolute tomboy. What is that called anymore? I don't know. With trains and cars and going to car shows. I did car mechanics. I did a car course. I was just very much that kind of, you know, I was like, I liked all kind of guy things. That was me. That's who I am. So absolutely, you know, like I'm the male dressing, lots of hair split somewhere between man and woman person. Yeah, that's how I've always been. And in a curious twist of fate, I find myself a dear friend, the incredible singer-songwriter Julia Fordham, who lives in California, and she's throwing this afternoon tea party, and we used to live near to each other. And she's invited Joni Mitchell, Saint Joni of Mitchell. Hang on, strap in. This is going
to
kill you.
I need to do something. I need to do something.
Just to breathe.
Breathe. That's what I need to do.
Kegels.
Carry on.
So Joni's invited because Julia Dunn had her ex-husband, Larry Klein, producing records. And I've become great friends with Larry myself. He's a fabulous, fabulous man. And there's Joni. And Joni's sitting at the table. And I already met Joni once before. And it was just like one of those kind of ridiculous, hurl myself on the floor and prostrate myself in front of her and thank her for life. And it was great. This is the second time. So now I've let...
Did she remember you?
Yes! Poor thing. But she thought I was Irish. So that's the only downside. So anyway, I'm just brushing over that. So I'm sitting outside, and here's Joni, Saint Joni of Mitchell, Saint Joni, patron saint of singer-songwriters, our leader, the woman who has made it okay to be, you know, for another generation in the 70s, to be driven by your career, your music, to not be that typical woman, to just like, steam through men, you know, it's just leave them all in your dust, to be so articulate and remarkable, such a poet, such an artist, a true artist who is born, does the thing they are born to do. And that's Joni. But what I didn't realize is that I'm talking to Joni, and Joni is a tomboy. And Joni's talking about being a kid and being such a tomboy and being the kind of tree climbing, fun, playing with all like the mud and just like wanting to just be absolutely a boy. And I'm like, I love you. I'd love to. I mean, obviously you can't love Joni Mitchell any more than you could possibly love her, but I did in that moment because she's real and authentic and funny. And I like her company. And it's like, and we're on an entire table of all women just hackling, you know, I mean, just like cackling like witches. Those are the moments that I really appreciate. I have created these sort of like women's dinners down here in New Orleans where we go out regularly. And there's such an extraordinary group of people down here, you know, from like sculptors and artists and singers and writers and designers. And I mean, it had all sorts of people and judges and human rights defenders. I mean, it had all sorts of incredible people. And so Lock, Stock and Barrel, here we all go, a whole bunch of women together. And it is really, it's a thing of wonder. As I watch us all asking each other what we're doing and appreciating each other and loving what each of us are doing and feeling richer, feeling much richer for suddenly it not being that situation where we're in competition. That doesn't mean that you don't feel disappointed and sad and like let down if things don't go your way or if you're not getting the breaks that other people are getting. That's not what I'm talking about. That's normal. That's human to feel those things. Of course we do. But that to stop feeling like that person's joy, that person's success means that there's not enough for me. They've taken it from me. That is not true. And I think
when our women embrace that and knew that and just like instinctively knew that and support each other. Nelly buying other musicians' property so they wouldn't suffer. I mean, that's totally empowering.
Yeah, her supporting, you know, her entire family, her being that person who's like sisters and family, you know, she had everybody she's looking after. I mean, it's Mary Lou Williams was, you know, supporting a lot of musicians who were really down in their luck, and a lot of them were struggling with drugs. And it was, again, it's just like it's that generosity of spirit. It changes everything. And I've noticed in life sometimes, especially in music, especially when it comes to artists, some people don't feel okay, men and women, with having really incredibly talented people around them. It makes them feel insecure because it's taking away from me.
It's driving you. It's building you. It's
thank
giving you.
And what it's really doing is it's actually making everything better. You, the music, the show, the performance, everything. You're raising the bar. The better the people you have around you, men and women, better it all is, the greater it is.
I love that. That's so beautiful. With all that said, why did you get me fired from the tour?
You were trying to shag the band.
Okay, so that's it for this episode. We'll be back next time.
She was talking about
how these women unapologetically laughed in the smooth, smooth face of ageism. Huge thanks to you for listening, and to you, you awful woman, Judith Owen, for making this oral joy
possible. I get scared every time.
To come on
every time you
us.
Say oral joy, I wince. Do carry on.
You are welcome. Don't forget to come on and get us next week and to follow and give the series a review. Unapologetically, Judith Owen is produced by Pineapple Audio Production, and we will see you next time.